But I think that, you know, if someone wants to experience, you know, that raw, authentic, like, feeling of just being present, my advice is just try it. See how you feel, you know? So.
Yeah, it's a different feeling to be drunk and connecting with someone right. and to be sober right. and connecting with someone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's real and more authentic.
Welcome to Sweet Release Podcast with me, Barbie Jean. Hi, sweets. Welcome back to Sweet Release, where we discuss mindful connection and exploration and just how to live authentically and help you on that journey to self-love. I'm Barbie Jean, your host, and today I have Chris here next to me. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited for this chat. You are kind of a resource for people in their journey through kind of healing with addiction and recovery.
Correct.
And kind of that whole mental well-being.
Right.
So I'm excited to give a lot of tools today. I feel like there's a lot of synergy between our kind of brands, just because I talk a lot about healing, mindfulness, and kind of tools to help you mm-hmm. live a better life. And I think you're the same thing. Yeah, absolutely. So I would love to kind of start before we dive into like your journey and kind of your experiences and what you've learned and tools and stuff like that. Kind of like your take on mental health. I feel like there can be kind of a stigma to that word and a heaviness to it. So I think it'd be nice to like welcome my listeners with kind of like how this could help them and what you think like mental health means. And
absolutely. Well, we all have mental health. Like there is a stigma around that word, and there's a stigma. I think it's different for males and different for females. You know, males are brought up to, you know, tough everything, at least in general, and I'm speaking in general, tough everything out, gut it out, show up, push through. Men seem to internalize things. And a lot of us aren't allowed, you know, when we're growing up, crying is kind of a sign of weakness. Women, a lot of times they do, or you guys are a little more open to talking about things, but still mental health, the word mental health has a stigma around it. Like, oh, something's wrong with me, you know? And so we're all on a spectrum somewhere with our mental health, just like we are with our physical health. Some people are in great shape. Some people aren't. Some people, you know, eat correctly. Some people don't. A lot of us like me are somewhere in the middle, you know, and really work towards that. And so mental health is basically where you are in that spectrum. And there are so many different aspects to it, and we're learning more and more. I want to preference everything by saying I'm not a licensed therapist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a doctor. I got into this space through my own journey. I got sober 18 years ago and really started exploring and trying to figure out, you know, why I became addicted to drugs and alcohol and what that was about. And learned a lot about myself, and then I ended up started working in we call it substance use disorder. That's the proper term for addiction now, and mental health space, helping operate a lot of different treatment facilities. And right now I'm working for a place where what's called a virtual intensive outpatient, where we help people that are in somewhat crisis, but not in enough crisis where they need to be checked into a hospital, and they're able to function and still go to work, but need a little extra help than just seeing a therapist or a psychiatrist for 60, 90 days. So yes, I am a resource for people that are just struggling and looking for where to turn. So,
yeah. Yeah. Thanks for all that you do. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Did you feel like you were struggling with your life before you got sober decades ago? Or was there like a moment for you that made you walk into that meeting?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of moments that did, and, you know, kind of even backing up before then, you know, growing up, you know, in retrospect, I always felt a little off. I always felt a little uncomfortable to my own skin. You know, the first time I drank, you know, I was very young, but as I kind of progressed, drugs and alcohol, we were talking about this before we came on air, you know, did something for me that nothing else ever did. It made me feel normal. It made me feel okay. It made me with a few drinks, I was able to socialize. Mm-hmm. With a few drinks, I was able to open up. And in retrospect, I was able to socialize and open up. I just didn't feel right doing that. So it kind of became a solution instead of a problem at first, if that makes sense. And then as I got through, you know, life and things happened and circumstances started happening, I started crossing lines. You know, I'll never do this. I'll never do that. I'll never drive drunk. I'll never, you know, do something dishonest to get money to obtain drugs or things of that nature. But mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a moment, you know, we talked about it a little bit before, where I missed a Christmas function with a girl that I was engaged with's family, because I was so inebriated, I just couldn't make it. And I decided to get sober. And I knew about the 12-step programs. I knew about treatment. I knew about all that stuff. And that started kind of a 2-year journey trying to get sober and not being able to. And so it was a struggle. Finally, I had a moment stick where somebody just said something to me that got me thinking in a 12-step meeting. A guy said to me, just because you want to get sober doesn't mean you get to get sober. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? I still don't know what it means, but it got me thinking that night. And I went home and I got drunk that night, like not bad drunk, just drunk. And I laid in bed and I smoked a joint. I'm sitting there thinking, what does that mean? Is this going to be my life? Am I going to be one of those guys that just struggles with this my whole life? And that was my last day, last night that I drank. And that was June 5th, 2006. June 6th, 2006 was my first day sober. So it's been 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like those first couple years is what I hear is like the tough part. And then once you get past that, like 2-year mark or year and a half mark is, I mean, I'm sure it's tough every single day, but it's good to remind people to like, keep going, even if yeah. It's not like a failure. If you mess up, it's just your body is so used to leaning on it.
Not only is your body so used to leaning on it. I mean, there are people that can have a couple of drinks and it's not a problem. There are people that smoke a little weed and it's not a problem. There's people that probably do things on the weekends once a month and it's not a problem. For me, it was a problem because it was my solution. And so when you stop using all those feelings, all that rawness of life comes up, you know, all the things that, you know, talking about mental health, all the things, the traumatic things that had happened to me as a child that I never dealt with, you know, those were in my body. And so you feel the reason it's tough at first is you feel very raw. You feel very exposed. You feel very uncomfortable. And so that's why there's more to quitting drinking and doing drugs and more to getting over your mental health than just quitting. If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And I think like we kind of touched on it, but I do think a lot of people use alcohol and drugs or whatever their substance of choice is to as kind of a crutch. You know, I think mm-hmm. even in like the play communities I've seen, like a lot of people have that drink to loosen up, have that drink, like you said, to feel like you can flirt or talk to that person you want to talk to. And I think people are leaning on it more and more. And it's interesting to see so heavily used nowadays, mm-hmm. drugs and alcohol, and how you're kind of not really living authentically because you're not really fully tapped into yourself.
Yeah.
So was there like a, did it feel like you're talking about it was so challenging, but was there like a way that you could help people kind of sit with that discomfort at first and really like tap into their authenticity?
Yeah. I think it's so individualized for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, I is there something wrong with having a couple glasses of wine at a party to kind of loosen up? I don't know. That's somebody's personal choice. Mm-hmm. You know, is it causing an issue for you? I think is the first question you have to ask yourself.
Yeah.
Is it putting barriers in between you and your relationships? For example, if you go to a party with someone, you know, and that's your date or your wife or your girlfriend, and all of a sudden you're embarrassing them or you're doing this or doing that. Is that an issue? Or are you having a couple of drinks just to loosen up and have friends? But I think that, you know, if someone wants to experience, you know, that raw, authentic like feeling of just being present, my advice is just try it. See how you feel, you know? So.
Yeah, it's a different feeling to be drunk and connecting with someone right. and to be sober right. and connecting with someone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's real and more authentic. So.
Did you have a problem with like feeling that judgment initially from friends or peers or people, or how did you kind of feel that pleasure of life or enjoy things in life? Like,
well, when I first got sober, a lot of my friends that I thought were my friends
were not
around, you know, okay. because we weren't doing the same thing. So I had to go make a whole group new of community. New friends that were like-minded, you know? And then people that I thought maybe weren't my friends, people that were judging me, were just glad that I was sober and glad that I was around. So I reconnected with a lot of people, especially with family. Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you feel like community was a big.
Yeah. Community, I think, is a huge thing. And really, you know, I think with any community, like the community you're talking about, like the community is such a huge thing for anything that we do. And there is a, there, you know, the beautiful thing about the sobriety community that people may not know or understand is it's so diverse and there's so many different communities within that community. You know, there's, you know, older ladies that like to knit, sober communities, there's people that are in your space communities that are sober. There's, you know, I have a whole bunch of friends that ride motorcycles together that are sober. There's, cool, you know, there's a whole group of guys I know that go hiking every weekend. So the cool thing about being sober is whatever you're into, there's people that are into that and doing it sober. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a big component that helps people just feel accepted and not judgment when you find people like-minded individuals.
Absolutely. And, you know, you also find as you kind of get a little more into your journey, or at least I did, there's really no judgment from the majority of people. You know, that judgment, that feeling of judgment is
within
false. It's not real, you know, and most people, and I'm very proud to tell people that I'm clean and sober now. I have no problem telling people I'm clean and sober. We kind of have a joke. I think we talked about it a little bit before that somebody asked why I don't drink. I got to be home for Christmas, and it could be June when I say that. But, you know, sobriety is part of who I am. It's what I do. I really don't put too much thought into it anymore. It's not a battle. It's not a struggle. What is a struggle, you know, and what is, you know, a constant work in progress is talking about the other subject we're talking about is working on my mental health and what I do to work on staying current and always trying to grow in those spaces. So I do a lot of different things personally for mindfulness and for just being present. I go to therapy. I really enjoy doing breathworks groups. I take a lot of walks. I'm always reading. In the sobriety community, I sponsor guys, which means I help take them through the 12 steps as kind of part of what we do. And I get a lot, get a lot of value from doing that. I work in that space. So I'm constantly working on helping people find resources for treatment, find resources for therapy, find resources to get help. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love all of that. And I feel like I've touched on all of those topics in, to a degree. But let's break it down a little bit. So like therapy, do you mean like just talking to someone, like having a therapist?
Yeah. Or even I mean, me personally, I see a therapist once a month, whether I need to or not.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's something you got to do to stay current. Mm-hmm. It's a space where I can go and talk to someone and have a really safe place to talk about things that may be up here that, you know, or maybe I may be going through. We're going to just leave it all on the table.
Sometimes I've had a therapy session where I didn't think even there was something I needed to go through, but then we got there and then I was like, oh, wait, like all these things are coming up now when I have this moment to like sit and be present and like just have a conversation with someone that's not in my everyday life, you know? Yeah. So I do think it can be a really healthy tool for people just to connect in that way. But also these other tools like, breath work and reading. Mm-hmm. Yes. So breath work, is that something you do daily? Like, do you have a...
I mean, I try to, you know, it's really hard for me to personally like do solo. I love going to breath work classes. I don't know if you've ever been doing breath work classes.
But I've been doing some recently.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody has unique experiences, you know. I mean, I actually generally, I don't know if it's hallucinate, but I see lights, you know, the ones that I go to, we have the mask and I always see red and blue. And like, as I calm down, the lights kind of change to white and I always feel extremely relaxed. You know, again, I'm not a therapist, but I understand a lot about trauma. And, you know, if we've all had trauma, if you've had a pet die, you've had a traumatic event, and there's an excellent book called The Body Keeps Score that really explains that. And we hold trauma in our body. And I think things like breath works, things like yoga, things like meditation allow us to kind of get some of that stuff out. So, you know.
Yeah, it is a tool. And I even do sweet releases and talk about how important that could be a release for you too.
Sure.
But breath work, I had a recent experience, even it was just like a month or so ago, or maybe 2 months ago now. It was my first one or maybe my second one. I've been going to this yoga class down the street and they do yoga, sound, and breath work. And it's all kind of mixed into every single class to some degree. But this was like a breath work and sound class. So there's like
music. So like breath work with sound bath and
Yeah. Okay, and it's a full guided hour. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling overwhelmed by so many things that week, but the biggest part that was just like breaking my heart was my favorite fish died, which is, I know it's just a fish, but she wasn't just a fish. Yeah. She was this beautiful, huge discus fish, and her name was Wonder, RIP, and she was just like my favorite fish. When my partner and I went to the store, like she was the one I'd immediately, and I was like, she's the one we want, and I just, her, they just have this character. These fish, they're very smart. And just the way that she interacted with the bottom and the plants and the other fish, like she was a wonder. She was really cool. And when she died, I just couldn't get over it. I was so sad. Mm-hmm. And that class I did with my girlfriend, actually, I think it was the one by myself where I had this huge release, but a lot of people like cry during it and they have these like emotional releases. And sometimes that can be kind of distracting. I try to stay focused on myself, but I was having kind of like a silent kind of tears flowing, letting them flow. Mm-hmm. And then I started having, you know, you get kind of like, some people get really cold, some people get really shaky, but I was kind of getting very shaky, but I saw this like blue, like image of a fish. And it was like surrounded by this like light and my eyes were closed and we had the masks too. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of like swam into like the corner of my vision. And it just made me so happy. Like it's so silly, but it was just like, oh my God, she's okay. Like I'm okay. I'm going to be okay. You know? And it just kind of a warm moment that I think just helped me move on, you know, and let go a little bit.
Yeah. And a lot of people have those kind of reactions to breath works. I mean, the first time I did it, I'm like, what am I getting into? This is weird.
It kind of feels like you're on mushrooms in a way. Yeah,
my friend Jeremy, you know, he's a breath works expert and invited me to one of the classes he was doing. And, you know, I'd done a sound bath class before meditation, but I'd never done a breath works. And, you know, it was very like, cause I had witnessed breath works classes at some of the places I'd worked at before. And I've seen people cry and have releases. But like, for me, I was like, oh, this is going to be, and the first time I did, I got teared up and, you know, I don't think I was thinking about anything specific, but yeah, I definitely had a very emotional response to it. And then after that, I had those visions of the light, you know, and it wasn't like I knew I wasn't really seeing the light, but the lights were there because my eyes were closed and I had the mask on. So
it's definitely breath can be transformative.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How does it, I know you're kind of doing these certain breathing in certain counts, holding, and sometimes you do longer holds, and it's nice to have guided ones, but you're kind of depriving your body, or you're using so much oxygen, right? It's not deprivation. It's more like you're using so much oxygen that you're not used to.
Right.
So it can create these releases or...
That's my understanding. Yeah.
Yeah. So it can definitely be very helpful.
Well, it's neat that you did that.
So, I know. Yeah. I've been really enjoying that studio or that space. It has like a beautiful skylight and it's just like very Venice, but it's really nice. And they have class pass ones. So I always try to get them when they're low points and get in there. But yeah, it's an awesome studio. You were also mentioning reading. That's like kind of a tool for you.
Yeah. I mean, I try to read or listen to an audiobook all the time.
Just helps you kind of.
Just helps me ground and feel like I'm growing.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a big part of, you know, mental health as well. I mean, you know, kind of look at it like three-sided. You have your physical part, you know, physical exercise, I think is very important for your mental health, you know, your spiritual part, whatever that is for you. Mm-hmm. Right. And then your mental part. And I feel like always understanding, trying to learn something new and understand different ways that people look at things, or just maybe just reading something for fun. I try to like go back and forth. Right now I'm reading a leadership book that was written by a therapist called No Ego, that has a really different point of view in leadership than normal kind of HR experts would present. So I'm really kind of enjoying that. And sometimes I agree with stuff I read and sometimes I don't, but like, you know, I try to always ask somebody I think is way smarter than me, hey, what's a good book? You know? So.
Yeah. My partner's always saying like, you should be surrounded by people that are smarter than you, because it just makes you, you know, it makes you grow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, in your space, like what do you see? Like, so your podcast is, I understand what it's about, and a lot of it's about mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Like, what are some like mindfulness things that you guys explore, maybe talk about in your community?
Well, I've done a lot of conversations about just like mindful exploration, whether it's just like breath work with your partner, or kind of more like the Tantra approach where you're kind of looking at each other, doing gazing, and just kind of like really connecting with lovers before you have an intimate session. But I think mostly the main kind of topic or flow in all these conversations that I have are just kind of feeling like empowered in yourself and feeling like, and loving yourself, whatever that is, whatever unique things that you're into, and just kind of learning to love yourself and harness all the unique erotic authenticity and the unique parts of you that make you you, and kind of learning to communicate that too with your lovers.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, even just like my journey and my sexual journey, I feel like there were so many things that I wish I knew then. And you kind of, for me, I dove in head first into kink world and into the sex party space. And I felt like I crossed a lot of boundaries, personal boundaries. I definitely crossed other people's boundaries. Like there was just this phase where I was just kind of like head first exploring. And you know, exploring my sexuality and all the things that felt good at the time. But when you kind of like, then I kind of went through a phase of reading all these self-help books or feeling like kind of at my rock bottom and like, are these people even my friends? Like just kind of reevaluating like what felt good to me and what kind of relationship I wanted to. And I started really realizing how important like boundaries are and how important just like being aware is, you know, like I felt like I lived so frequently in this state of unawareness. And then finally I was like, whoa, like that doesn't feel right. So I think I came into this space wanting to educate people on how to feel their best and how to be aware and how to have these, it's mindfulness that is such a common word nowadays, but it is, there's so many tools, whether it's, you know, just kind of telling yourself things that you love about yourself, or some of these tools that we've already mentioned to kind of tap into that kind of raw and real energy.
Right.
But I do think like the common, like your passion is, you know, helping people with addiction and recovery. And I think even like the first sex party I went to, I think a lot of people that are into play parties and exploration in the bedroom, like, they're going to be people that like to also explore, travel the world, that also like to explore with extracurriculars is what I call them, like substances and stuff. And I remember the first party I went to, there was like a table and it just had like all the drugs. And then it had another table with like all the toys. And it was just like, I feel like a lot of people, because we're so uncomfortable in these intimate moments with people, that sometimes we lean on drugs and alcohol too much sometimes in the space. And I had a recent listener reach out to me that was just like, I'm sober and I don't even know how to connect with people anymore. Like it's so difficult. He's on just like a 2-year journey. And so he was hoping to have more people on the podcast to like discuss that. And so I'm excited to have you here to just shed some light on it, because I do think there's so many people that are leaning more into that realness, or, you know, they do feel like they've had a problem, so they've stepped back. And so, yeah, I'm just grateful for you to like shed some light on it a little bit, because I think there's a lot of people, especially in LA, that have gone the California sober route or have, you know, said goodbye to alcohol, and it feels a little bit more welcomed here, but there's people across the globe that, you know, it's maybe a little bit more difficult for them.
Yeah. Well, I think what your listener was talking about is just having that exposed raw feeling of not, I hate using the word crutch because it's way more than a crutch, but it's, you know, having experienced life raw, real, and authentic. And a lot of times, you know, you talked about your journey, what feels right and what doesn't feel right is where your boundaries are. And when you get sober, you have to learn where those are for you. And it's different for everyone. And yeah, I think that, you know, my feedback to that person would be is trust your gut. You know, the other thing I want to say about all the stuff laying out on the table. So when I got sober 18 years ago, I did a lot of coke, a lot of ecstasy, a lot of substances. But it was a very different time back then. And, you know, today we have, I think it's 270 people a day dying, I mean, of overdoses. And a lot of that is because of the fentanyl epidemic. And fentanyl is in everything now. And it's such a deadly, deadly drug. And a lot of people that overdose don't even know they're using fentanyl. You know, my son was a college athlete, in Pennsylvania, and he was a football player and he was friends with some of the soccer kids. And this just happened about a year ago. And a couple of the soccer kids bought an 8-ball of coke just to kind of have a college kind of night out, and ended up, they found him dead in a hotel room because they, the coke had fentanyl in it. So I hope that people are being very careful and very safe. And I hope that at places where that stuff is available, that there's also Narcan available, because it definitely saves people's lives. So I kind of wanted to go on my soapbox speech about that, because it's just a different time we live in now.
And no, it's a
scary,
is.
Scary time. So it is life and death. And, you know, pretty much everybody I know is touched by somebody that's,
everyone knows that's somebody that's died. Yeah. You know,
and that wasn't the case 10 years ago.
Right.
You might have known somebody that overdosed, or you might not have, but now it's like most people that you talk to know somebody that's overdosed. So,
yeah, I would say that's one of the reasons I've also leaned back on it. I think in my 20s, like, I was definitely doing Molly, popping pills when I was having dance, even when I lived in Australia, like, we called them pingas, like, you know, popping those pressed pills. And it was fun. But with this epidemic, it's scary, because even I've even like heard, even if those testing kits, which I have, and even the Narcan, sometimes it can't even pick up certain substances, or you're just testing a certain part of it. And there's just so much there's just a lot more fear, I think, in it. Yeah. And so for me, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a scary, scary world that we live in, and it's a lot different. And you know, I don't think it's going anywhere.
Yeah.
It's here to stay. And, you know, in my space, I probably hear of somebody every other week that either I had contact with, or that I knew that at some point in their journey, I was trying to help them, you know, died. And they're usually some people in their late 20s or early 30s. And yeah, it's a sad deal. So,
yeah. Yeah, I love that you said that that's a part that kind of helps you, maybe not, maybe this isn't what you said, helps you stay sober, but helps you kind of live to the best of your being is by helping people and by being.
Yeah. So I was able to really, you know, just kind of more about my journey. You know, I got sober. I got married to someone that was sober. We've been married coming up on 17 years. We've had a couple kids together, have great lives, both have great careers. You know, my life is really, really full and whole and good. 100% because of sobriety. I don't think I would be able to manage or have such a full, whole life if I hadn't gotten sober and I would have stayed in that cycle that I was in that I talked about earlier, where it was like, oh my gosh, am I going to be that guy that's just continuing to go, because I had crossed a line where I got to a point where it wasn't just like I could have three or four beers and get a buzz and stop. I mean, I would go. I would just all day, every day, go. And I really respect and value that. And, you know, for me, because I was in that space, it's my sobriety is, you know, one of the most important things in my life that allows me to have all these other beautiful parts of my life with my wife and my kids and my career and my friends and being able to do fun things. And, you know, so.
Yeah. It's like a presence is something I talk a lot about. And I think if you're drinking or, you know, it just kind of disconnects you. So by being sober, I'm sure you're a better dad, a better wife, a better lover, all that.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, I was like kind of reflecting on what you were saying that your listener was calling about. Wait, was he just, did he just get sober? Or is he been sober?
It's been a couple years, but he's only been with like one other partner. And he said it was just like really tough.
Yeah.
Cause he was always using, I think he said alcohol. I meant to send you that message. But he said he was just like struggling with even performance anxiety and just kind of really, really just hoping that I could have some more conversations about sobriety, because it's been tough for him to navigate that in the sex space.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, I would also say there's a lot of other sober people out there that, you know, want a date.
Totally. Maybe put that on your little.
I mean, I'll get a little personal. Performance anxiety right when you first get sober is probably a real natural thing. And I think it's okay to kind of allow yourself to just be okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think acknowledging it, you know, is important. And I think getting some professional help for that. Like there's all kinds of like,
There's lots
of doctors you can go see. There's, you know, talking about that in therapy, you know, and that's kind of like the thing about like sobriety and the 12 steps, you know, and those communities, they're not all encompassing for all parts of our life, meaning that you can go to meetings and you can do all this stuff and stay sober and feel pretty good about staying sober. But, you know, for me, there was, and I needed to go to therapy and I needed to explore, you know, getting in good physical shape. And I needed to, you know, talk about things like that with, you know, our professionals. So,
Well, it's a good reminder, even when you're in those meetings, I'm sure you learn from other people there, like what's working for them, how and so you're kind of like all, it's a community where you all kind of like.
And you learn kind of like, oh, I don't want to do it that way too. I mean, you see some people that are like, I don't want what they have as well.
Good point.
So, you know, you kind of find your tribe. So.
Yeah. Do you ever do any journaling or writing?
I do. Well, I mean, I journal in a weird way. I journal like what I want to accomplish. I do a lot of writing with goals.
Oh, goals. Nice. Yeah.
You know, I do the yearly thing where I set my year goals and try to break them down in weekly goals. And
oh, cool.
I do that whole kind of thing.
That's a big part that I've touched on a lot too, because I started this podcast because I had written a book, a memoir about my life, and is just kind of using it to build a brand and a following to sell my book one day too. But I love writing, and I've always kept a journal. I've kind of fallen off that though in the last few years, but I do still kind of write and work on my book. And I think even when you're kind of caught up in your head or you're unsure about how you're feeling, like sometimes just writing, sitting down, having a moment with your thoughts, if you're uncomfortable having, sometimes people are feel weird about therapy. I think like writing can be a really good tool to kind of tap into that mind.
I think writing's good. Definitely for me, it just kind of organizes the craziness that's going on here and the racing thoughts and really trying to like put pen to paper with what I'm thinking. But more for me, it's like, if I write it down, I'll usually do it.
Yeah.
Meaning like, if I don't write it down, I don't, you know, it's an idea, if that makes sense. And that kind of always helps my mental state because it helps me feel present. Okay, this is what I need to get done this day. Or this is what I thought about yesterday. I need to kind of like do some brainstorming on this or that. So
yeah.
Being afraid of therapy, I think it's like being afraid of going to the doctor when you have the flu.
I like that.
because you mentioned that, you know?
And yeah.
So going back to like the stigma of mental health, they're like, oh, I don't need to talk to anybody. I don't need therapy.
That's true.
It's like, that's what we do, you know? And if you think about like people that are struggling with mental health, you know, there's probably like three buckets to it. Number one, it's community, like that we've talked about. Number two, like for a lot of people, there might be some chemical things going on, right? Like for me, I was depressed when I first got sober. So I got on some antidepressants and that's okay too. So like there might be chemical stuff, and that's through psychiatry and seeking out a psychiatrist. And then the third is, you know, the therapeutic part of it. And that's finding a licensed therapist to talk to. And, you know, so yeah, I think that, you know, again, like, just in our conversation, you see the stigma of mental health because you bring up people that are afraid of therapy. Like
it's real.
In reality, that's, if we think about it, like on paper, that's crazy. But for us, that makes sense. It's like, yeah, people are afraid of therapy. People are afraid to say, oh, I have something wrong with me mentally. Well, it doesn't mean you have something wrong with you. It means you're human.
Mm-hmm.
And our programming is maybe a little bit off in society about mental health and about addiction, you know?
I think communicating too, like having those conversations for so many people is so tough. And that's something I try to illuminate as well, is like, talk to people you love, like, you know, let them in, because then you're going to be able to easily talk to a stranger and find the right person for you. Cause that's the part that, you know, my mom's been trying to find a therapist, and she's just like, it's tough. Like you want to connect to that person. You want to feel like they hear you, or you want to feel like they are your vibe. Like my favorite therapist I ever had, she was like very Buddhist, and she was into meditating and art therapy. And so every session we incorporated meditating or art in some way, if we could. And so it was just like a beautiful style that felt really right for me. And so sometimes it's exhausting finding that right one. So I could see why some people are fearful of it, but it's also like, it's so good for you. So just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let me comment on that. Like how to find a therapist.
Yeah, please.
Psychology Today is a website.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard of it.
Most licensed therapists have their bio, and a lot of them will talk about, they take this insurance, this is what their cash pay rate is. So you can look at all the therapists in your area, no matter where you are in the United States, plug in your zip code and read about different therapists, right? Mm-hmm. That's step one. That's what I would suggest that people do. Step two is it's extremely appropriate to ask for a 15-minute consultation before you sign up for a therapy session and spend any money. If a therapist is not willing to give you a 15-minute consultation, probably I would shy away from that therapist.
Yeah, so good
you
advice.
It's almost like an interview both ways to see if there's a fit, a jive, a feeling. Because just like in the real world, not everybody's going to jive with me. Not everybody's going to jive with you. Some people are going to be friends. Some people you're going to feel connection with the first time you talk to them. Some people you're going to run into and you're not, you know? And so you have to find what feels right and fits for you. So it's very appropriate to ask for a 15-minute consultation and at least talk to two or three or four just about your situation and what you're going through. And you can do that through telehealth, which I want to kind of talk about that too. COVID has proven that telehealth is a very effective tool for therapy. And not everyone is going to buy into that. And it's okay if you don't. You want to see people in person. But a lot of people feel way more comfortable from their bedroom or their own home talking to someone across the screen. And it's okay to utilize telehealth as well. So
yeah, I was even doing that for a while. I've kind of stepped away from it, but I was doing some kink and intimacy coaching and it was all over Zoom. And and yeah, I think it's easy too. You don't have to leave your home. And yeah, it's kind of the comfort of your own space and and even the comfort of the screen, you know? Well, kind of like before we wrap up, I would love to hear, I know you kind of talked about like kind of the first step is figuring out like if you have a problem, right?
With sobriety, kind of like, correct?
Yeah, with sobriety.
I mean, I believe everybody needs to be in therapy. I think if you walk the face of the earth, therapy can help you. So
I forgot what I was going to say, but no, you're good.
So first step is like, if you feel like you maybe have a problem with substances, addiction, alcoholism, maybe just have a drinking problem, which is different than being an alcoholic. You know, what do you do? I would suggest you pick up the phone and talk to someone that you trust, you know, and listen and be open to listen. Most people, including myself, that have issues with substances are very defensive until that moment where we're not, you know? And so that is something that's, you know, kind of have, we call it a moment of clarity. You kind of got to have that moment of clarity where you're ready to kind of take a look at yourself and then just ask for help. You know, you can tag me on this post on my Instagram. People are welcome to reach out to me anytime and I can help them. But yeah, the first step is, you know, if you identify you have a problem, asking for help. And then I would say if you're questioning whether you have a problem or not, experiment with it just like you've experimented with other things. Try going to a party sober. Try doing something without drinking. Can you do it? Try to go, if you think you maybe have a problem drinking, try to go to a bar and have one drink and stop. Were you able to do it? So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that advice. Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. I do want to kind of like also talk about some resources for people that are in crisis or people that really feel like they're really struggling with their mental health and they don't know where to turn and they feel like it's serious. There's a number called 988. It's not 911, so you're not calling the police. It's a crisis line. 988 is a very good resources for people that may be like having suicidal ideations, thinking, you know, they just can't go on. You know, there's all kinds of resources out there for people that maybe need to go to treatment. Again, if somebody ever feels like they need more than just seeing a therapist or whatever, they can reach out to me through Instagram or however you have this posted. You know, I'll always try to help someone connect someone with resources. So,
yeah, thanks for that. Yeah. I think that's an easy one for people to remember, you know? And I think, like you said in the beginning, you know, it is a spectrum. And I think there's a lot of people that feel like a burden when they're like opening up to loved ones or feel like, again, like, yeah, like something's wrong with them if they're having suicidal thoughts or if they're having these, this like lower energy or whatever it is. Like, I think it's just important to, take that step, dial 988 and just like talk about it or try to open up with someone you love if that feels more comforting. But just, take that leap.
Yeah. I would like to kind of add to find someone, maybe open up to someone you love, but also open up to someone that looks like they have it together, you know, someone that's okay with talking about mental health because you know who those people are in your circles and you know who they're not, you know,
like, true. Yeah.
I sure love my dad, but I really want to open up to him about this stuff. But, you know, so if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So somebody that really, that you feel like you can trust to open up with this. And if you don't have that person, you know, do some research online and pick up the phone and call someone out of Psychology Today, or, you know, reach out to someone that you feel like you may not know, but you see that that has services like mine, and there's plenty of research you can do, you know, on where to go.
Totally. Thank you for all that. I appreciate it. Well, I do like to wrap my episodes with asking, when was that last time you had that sweet release, whatever that means to you?
Yeah. Well, I'm married and we have a beautiful relationship. I think you know, one of my biggest wins for, you know, the last couple of days is I have three children. They're all pretty spread apart in age. And my oldest son is first responder with LA County Fire.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, those guys have been involved in a lot lately. Mm-hmm. So I got to spend half a day with him on Saturday. And then my middle son got invited to a winter formal. So I got to take him and get him a tuxedo fitted for that and all that. And then the next day I spent with my daughter and we went and saw a play, Anastasia. And I was sitting in that play looking at my daughter and just thinking about how full my life is and how grateful I am for my family, my wife. And I just had that moment, like we talk about mindfulness, of just like gratitude and just like, you know, this is, you know, my life is full and I'm very fortunate and very lucky. And then when I think about why it is for me, it's because 18 years ago, I decided to stop doing all that stuff. And mm-hmm. it's allowed me to kind of grow into where I am today. So,
yeah. I love that. Yeah. That's very sweet. It is a sweet release. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing and thanks for being vulnerable with us and
absolutely
giving all your advice and tools. Could you share, you also have a podcast if people want to kind of learn more about this topic.
So they can get to my podcast through my Instagram. It's Chris M. Cox 72. Again, that's Chris M. Cox 72. And follow me on there and you'll see my podcast. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate your time and your knowledge and wisdom. Beautiful. And all of that.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Yeah. Right. And sweets, be sweet to yourself and welcome those sweet releases and just be here and be present and be yourself. Talk soon. Bye. Thank you.
All right.